Welcome to Asset Finance Connect's series of podcasts on the European asset finance industry. I'm Richard O'Donoghue, and over the next few months, I'll be chatting with industry experts about the challenges and opportunities facing our industry in 2025 and beyond. All this is possible with the sponsorship of Alpha. We'll tell you a bit more about Alpha later in the podcast.
So today I'm delighted to be joined by Ian Robertson from Invigors. Ian is a well-known figure in our industry, but Ian, maybe just introduce Invigors first of all.
Yeah, thank you very much, Richard, and nice to be with you this morning. Very quickly, we're a boutique advisory business servicing the asset finance industry only. So in terms of customer groups, we target lessors, large and small. We work very closely with the large and also emerging OEMs. So they're a large customer group, either folks who know the industry very well and have captives already in situ, those guys who might be going into kind of hybrid models and new entrants to the market, of which, you know, we can talk about later. But we also have, let's say, the asset finance ecosystem, so service providers, software vendors, who, you know, are an important part of the puzzle. Last but not least, we also do a lot of work with investors who are either interested in getting into the industry, so we might help them in terms of assess markets that could be interesting for them to get into, look at potential targets, as well as helping them through commercial and operational DD once they've found targets they're interested in. So that's us. We've got a lot of industry specialists. So we've got guys who, you know different domains. We've got a lot of folks who've come from the tech industry, people from life sciences, you know, spectrum of usual suspects, hard assets and assets.
Yeah, so it's a very, very, very broad kind of base of customers and indeed expertise. And you yourself, you're not a lifelong consultant. Not that I'm suggesting there's anything wrong with being a consultant, but you kind of fell, I don't want to say fell into it, but you kind of had a lot of practical experience before you started.
No, that's right, Richard. You know, my own background, I mean, you can knock consultants from, you know, morning to noon till dusk. I mean, I'm happy with that because I actually started my career in consulting. So, okay. I'm an engineer.
So you are a lifelong consultant.
Yeah, but I mean, being truthful, I felt a bit fraudulent. I started there and felt after 3 or 4 years I need to get out and get some specialization. So I did find finance and industry after the initial foray into consulting and, you know, found the asset finance industry in the late 90s on the Dell program, which, you know, very well. And, you know, from there, also had the pleasure of working with some of the other CIT programs. And then from there, went to Siemens Financial Services in Munich, was with SFS for 4 years, and had the great opportunity and pleasure to work with DLL as well, initially in the tech finance business, but ended up running asset management and remarketing for DLL globally across all the different lines of business. So, yeah, great fun. And, yeah, as you say, it's typical of most of our guys. We've got some industry pedigree and knowledge of it.
And I think the other thing is we're always keen to get views from a European perspective. And while, you know, you might be English, you live in Switzerland, you've worked in a number of countries. I mean, it's a very European broad perspective that you're bringing to your engagement.
And again, very lucky. Yeah, no, again, you know, it's true, Richard. I mean, we have geographical specialists, you know, more geographical specialists than myself, I must say. I've been lucky enough to have a very international career, but as you say, obviously a Brit, lived in France and then lived in the Netherlands when I was at DLL and now in Switzerland, and lucky enough to work on projects worldwide. So, and again, we've got lots of people with similar backgrounds to myself.
Right. Well, look, I think you bring a really broad European perspective, and I know Invigors and you attend a lot of conferences. I want to go back to the Amsterdam event and just get your thoughts on, you know, what you liked about that event and were there things that were maybe different or unique about it?
Yeah, no, it was a very good event, I have to say. You know, I think for the event organisers, there's always a balancing act between the commercials of having a large-scale event and you know, a smaller, intimate event. I think the event in Amsterdam for an attendee was just right, actually. It was in a very good venue where there was plenty of space to get and talk and network, which is, honestly, that's a lot of the value of these events, not just for consultants trying to either meet up with existing clients or find, you know, new opportunities. So in terms of networking, really, really strong events. But I think unusually for some of these events, you know, some very good content as well, of interesting new material, I would say, for somebody who's trying to help advise the industry. You know, it's always a pleasure to pick up on new material. And also, there were some interesting new attendees who I haven't seen at these sorts of events before. So that was, you know, excellent combination for myself.
Yeah, and maybe pick up on the kind of new material or the themes that you kind of were most interested in during the day.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can break that into a number of areas. I suppose for me, the newer material, which gets a lot of hype and, you know, maybe a few years ago it was sustainability. And then, you know, from a technology perspective, you know, blockchain came and went and didn't really leave too much of a mark yet on the industry. But AI got a lot of time at the event, but I think it was merited because it was, I think, very beneficial for people to, one, understand some of the emerging newer technologies or newer domains like agentic AI. That was super positive, I think, for many, many people, myself included. For me, it was that landed in terms of material because it was brought down to concrete use cases and some of the what to do's and what not to do's. So that was super interesting. Now, there was a good discussion around vendor finance. Where is it playing? Where does it resonate? What does it do for OEMs? And, you know, I would say not new in many senses, but I think, you know, the panel that was present had a very transparent and honest discussion around where does it make sense to partner and where does it make sense to stand alone as the OEM. And again, that's an area we do a lot of advisory work around, helping people navigate that space. But, you know, very good for people to have that discussed at large. And I guess another area which is somewhat linked to that is maybe the role of the different actors and the ownership structures. There was some discussion around BPCE and their move further into, particularly into vendor finance, obviously with the SCEF acquisition. Again, I wouldn't say I learned a lot there, but it's good for that to be, you know, openly discussed and discuss the future of the industry in that sense.
Yeah, I was kind of smiling when you said, and the vendor panel was very transparent, because I know...
Not because you were part.
Well, I was only moderating, but I was trying to push Matt Llewellyn from Palo Alto to identify the criteria he uses in picking his funding partners. And he was very resistant. He was like a British politician, just refusing to answer the question. But what I did think was interesting in that group, and a number of people commented on it afterwards, was none of them really emphasized pricing as being the key criteria. Mm. It was important. But what they all talked about was the importance of the people that engage on those, which is really encouraging in an era of AI. Interested in your thoughts on that, because again, you come from a captive background as well, so you've seen this.
I think you can't ignore pricing. I think it's kind of pre-qualification, so there's a requirement to have, you know, keen pricing. It doesn't need to be the cheapest in the market. So in places I worked and consulted to, it's not necessarily the determinant of which party gets chosen to service or, you know, share a market. That often happens. But I think the human dimension is critical, and maybe that's because there's not enough systems to compete or provide the service outside the person in the marketplace currently. That said, I do think there's going to be a role for human intervention. Even if everything's AI'd, there's always going to be a relationship piece. So in outside of the kind of leasing industry, we see it ourselves in our business. You know, our sales are made person to person. And it's certainly true at the upper end of the market or mid to upper market. That doesn't lend itself. You know, the industry is very good as a solution provider and a problem solver. And maybe the technology arrives at some point, but I think it's a way off. There's a huge amount of specialization and knowledge that is still very, very important when it comes to solving customers' problems. And just, you know, again, maybe there's a generational shift that happens at some point. People still like to be sold person to person, at least on the bigger transactions.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, even in my kind of day-to-day business at GSCF, we have client advisory boards where we bring together you know, funders, as in banks. We bring alternative asset managers. We bring corporates. And it's kind of the consistent theme, even though, you know, a lot of our sort of USP would be the technology and the platform that we have. Every time people say, you know, what's good about the company, they talk about people. At a time when, you know, you hear a lot about, is AI going to displace people? Is it going to replace all of us? You know, I find it quite encouraging. And I heard a podcast recently where somebody said, people need to do is emphasize the things that make people unique and not focus on the things that AI can do better. And I thought it was a very insightful comment.
It's a very good comment. And I think it has the potential to do a lot more for the industry as well. I think, you know, we've been pushing, or me in particular, given my background, I've been pushing hard on, we're an asset finance industry. We really should be pushing our knowledge and specialization around the asset. And we all know the challenges around, or historical challenges around, you know, just even getting good, consistent asset data. IoT is bringing the potential to learn a lot more about the asset through its life and do a lot more from that perspective. So without going as far as digital twinning, there's a lot of stuff that you can do, but you need to start with knowing what you've got and being able to finance it. And intelligent document processing is cheap, and it's something that I think people will embrace quite quickly. Again, the technology actually been there for quite a while, and some people have been using it successfully. But I think that could usher in changes that are beneficial in all sorts of areas in the industry. But the solution set, I think, has the potential to change, and the ability to become genuinely more specialized is also there. Again, not everybody will chase that down, but I think that that's something I can potentially see coming forward.
Yeah. Now, a quick word about our sponsors, Alpha. In our industry, we're constantly talking about new technologies and opportunities, particularly around intelligent document processing and other AI solutions. If you want to truly seize those opportunities, that's where Alpha comes in. Alongside full functionality for origination, servicing and collections, the Alpha Systems platform brings sophisticated tooling, helping you drive automation and sustainability, manage complex portfolios and enhance the customer experience.
So go talk to Alpha, or find out more at alphasystems.com.
One other thing I thought was very interesting, and a discussion that maybe we haven't had as much before at these events, was, you know, new players in the market, mm-hmm. and particularly alternative asset managers, yep. whether it's in private credit or, you know, there was very interesting discussion around sale and leaseback and an alternative asset manager actively looking for those deals when historically, maybe there's a bit of a stigma attached to sale and leaseback transactions. I'm interested in your thoughts, both from the discussion we had at the event, but also, are you seeing this more in some of the consultancy work you're doing?
Yeah, I think in the sale and leaseback topic we can tackle directly. We know it's not a new topic. Go back to early Dell days, 20 plus years ago. You know, that was part and parcel of the requests from clients regularly. Again, for you know, the Dell business, that was important to own the park and use that then to transition to their technology so that they'd take on a lot of, you know, non-Dell equipment and flip it. You know, that made a lot of sense. That's, you know, for good reason. It needs to be done well, it needs to be done professionally and mindful of what you're doing and the risks associated with it. So, you know, maybe it's not as being the space that a lot of people were comfortable playing. What you see with the alternative solution providers is, you know, a hunt for yield and a hunt for not small niches, but sizable, scalable niches. And that's one of them. The party that you referenced there was Santander. You know, we've actually already managed to find a party that have been seeking for somebody such as them. And, you know, they've already made that connection. We'll see whether that comes to fruition in terms of funding in due course. But, you know, there's lots of large and emerging niches that are not very well serviced by the current traditional asset finance industry. And that can be because technology's new, there are new risks in what the ask is. We see a lot of opportunity that's underserviced, and again, for, you know, sensible reasons, particularly around transition assets. And it's not just a technology topic, it's also a financial solution topic. Areas of that lend themselves well to kind of project finance, you know, different underwriting criteria and different risks. And again, there's appetite, again, if the scale is material enough for some of these parties. Again, you know, we're in touch with a lot of people around as a service topics, pay-per-use topics. Clearly, you've got to play in a measured fashion in these spaces. But, you know, again, we often get asked by people to solve problems that are not straightforward to solve. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a position in the market, I guess. So, again, having a good sense of risk appetite and are these solvable problems, that's a regular ask. And oftentimes, we can solve that. Otherwise, you say, listen, that's going to be...
That's impossible, yeah.
That's more venture capital. You know, really startup domains where it's going to be extremely difficult to solve. On the technology front, it's a regular ask.
And are there, I mean, can you share any examples of sort of technologies that you're being asked to look at and maybe the traditional funders just aren't comfortable with or don't understand?
Yeah, I think it's unfair to say don't understand. It's maybe the traditional funders don't see a big enough opportunity yet for them to deploy resource, and they've got other fish to fry, the bigger opportunities that they can get to more easily. So that's completely rational. You know, we're working with a number of affiliated companies around the space of green methanol, which, again, it's not new technology. It's been used in things like remote telco networks, where essentially you want a standby solution and or a solution just because you're off-grid and you're remote. So essentially, you end up just producing electrical power from green methanol that's transformed to hydrogen, and then you just run a traditional fuel cell. So I say traditional fuel cell. I mean, these things are moving apace.
I sense the mechanical engineer in you coming out here.
Sorry, I apologize.
That's okay. I'm taking extensive notes that I've compared with my son, who has an engineering degree as well, and he'll be suitably impressed.
But again, so what's new with some of the parties we're working for, and it actually came up at the event. Peter Yan from the Dutch Association talked about the local legislation in the Netherlands around construction sites. That's being solved right now somewhat expensively and perhaps not in the ideal way using battery technology, and there's a big rush to batteries. This is an alternative that could potentially, I wouldn't say displace, it won't displace completely, but there'll be areas where I think this technology is relevant. And so one of the parties we're working with is looking at moving that technology into support in the construction industry. We've got another business who's using the same technology, and that's going to be used for range extension on light commercial and HGVs. You know, again, the technology is proven, but it's just a different application. So both of these parties see that rental needs to be part of the salt, because the market, even though the technology is not new, the market adoption risk is there. And again, we've seen that time and time again with the newer technologies. It kind of either lends itself to, let's say, let's outsource that, or outsource that risk to rental or leasing, and or drive pay-per-use on something that's really uncertain in terms of uptake and adoption from at least from a customer's initial perspective.
Yeah, you know, what's very encouraging just listening to you is there's a huge number of kind of new areas, because there's sometimes a perception that the asset finance industry is very traditional, it's old, it's staid, nothing's really changing. We just finance PCs and cars and trucks and yellow metals and things like that. But there's a whole, I suppose, area that's developing. And as you say, maybe the larger players aren't in that space because they can't scale it at this point. But over time, it will develop. And I think that's very encouraging. And it kind of brings me into maybe the last topic we can touch on, because you do a lot of work with Lease Europe and the Futures Group in particular. Are you encouraged by, you know, the people that are coming into the industry or in their early stages of working in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, you know, apart from being great fun, yeah, and honestly, it's a bit of a privilege. You know, we do this stuff, we don't get paid to do it, but we get lots of value the other way by working with these guys. You know, we see a lot of very committed arts people coming of, you know, super diverse backgrounds coming into the industry. And, you know, this year we've got... At this stage, I think three ideas that would have won the event in Lease Europe in standalone years previously. The quality of thinking is very, very encouraging. And, you know, one of the areas that the guys are looking at is how to best exploit AI. And again, it's really concrete and clear how these technologies can be adopted and used to great effect in the industry. So I think we've, as an industry, not great at explaining what we do, what we can do. A lot of people, I think, have found us by accident. We could do, I think, and again, it's not pointing fingers at anybody, what we could do a better job is just explaining what an important role we play. Across the board, everybody knows we do a great job, or everybody in the industry knows we do a great job supporting SMEs. But we do an average job, I would say, about explaining the lifecycle management role that we do perform and can perform better. And again, I think as the solution sets get more evolved, that story will get richer and richer and richer. And, you know, people over time will see, why should I own this piece of equipment? And these guys are advising me when to move to a better piece of technology or to supplement the technology with an upgrade, which, again, the captives have been busy with this strategy for years. But I think there's ample room to do this better. That's going to be primed by more effective data management and, you know, aligning the interests across the industry. There's plenty of margin to be made. There's a question mark about who does what, and that will continue to evolve. But I think there's ample room for innovation and an opportunity for the industry.
Yeah.
Lease penetration is nowhere near it should be. And again, going back to your question about the future group, a lot of the youngsters, despite the political highs and lows around topics like sustainability, there's a lot of folks who have found the industry and really like the role that we play around resource utilization. And, you know, whatever position you take on the ESG themes, you know, we create value out of equipment which has economic value. And, you know, that sets us up very well for the future, I believe.
Yeah, no, that's very encouraging. And I think, you know, most of us probably did drift into this industry through a variety of routes. But what I always find interesting is when people come into the industry, they tend to stay, which again kind of shows that there are career paths, there's opportunities to learn new things. You know, you just talked about fuel cell technologies. You know, I don't think any of us would have thought we'd be looking at those kind of things when we first joined this industry. So it's very encouraging. One final question. I mean, again, you talked a bit about your background, started at consultancy, kind of worked in the industry, back in consulting, working with a lot of people. For people who are listening to this and maybe in the early stages of their careers and maybe not in the futures group, so they're not benefiting from your advice, what advice would you give people based on your career? You know, what's the best maybe career advice you were given, or maybe even better, the thing you were given but you didn't do and you wish you had done?
It's a very good question, Richard. I think there's a few things I can point to looking back. You know, it wasn't a career advice, it was back to student days. You know, one of the things that's always stuck me with, you know, don't assume you know everything, and there's nothing wrong in asking a question. You know, if you're asking a question, somebody else in the room will also have the same question, or maybe not the same question, but also would profit from getting the answer to your question. You know, if you ask the same question twice or three times, that might not be the best approach, but I think being curious is probably what it amounts to, and not being afraid to ask and to learn. You know, your example of the fuel cells is a good one. We're talking fuel cells this morning, but we'll be talking about something else in 6 months, 12 months time. So I think that's the beauty of the industry. We're dealing with tangible, physical, and sometimes virtual assets. The industry does not stand still. It's extremely dynamic, and we're solving real world problems every day. I think, you know, be open-minded and, you know, be flexible, and don't be afraid to make the next step. I mean, actually, one piece of advice I can also reflect on right now, as you make the steps up the organization, don't be afraid. Kind of always often a sense of imposter syndrome and fear of that next step. One of my bosses who is listening to this, know who he is, said, you know, you've been given the opportunity to make this step because we have confidence in you. You know, we know you're going to be successful, and don't be afraid to open your mouth and play your role. So I guess the other thing for consultants, you should use your ears more than using your mouth. That's the other piece of general advice. I think it's true for consultative selling and business in general. Listen process, and that'll take you a long way.
There's a reason we have two ears and one mouth, although we forget that a lot, and particularly on podcasts.
Yeah.
But listening, it's been a pleasure chatting to you, just getting your thoughts on the industry. I know it's kind of been a wide-ranging conversation around Amsterdam, but also I think sometimes it's really good just to reflect more broadly on what's going on. And again, what I take away from this today is there's a lot happening in the industry. There's a lot of new things happening. It's not the sort of traditional industry anymore. There's opportunities for people to develop and opportunities for us to grow businesses. And so very, very exciting times ahead. And thanks for sharing your perspective on it.
Pleasure, Richard. And maybe just also quickly to close, I mean, we've talked about some of the alternative lenders. There's also a lot of innovation and development going on in, I'd hesitate to say the traditional players, but the existing industry is also moving apace. I mean, it's an exciting place to be at the moment.
That note, what better way to finish? Ian, thanks for taking time today just to chat about it.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Asset Finance Connect, sponsored by Alpha. I always like speaking with Ian as he's worked in our industry for many years and provides some great perspectives and insights. I was particularly interested in his thoughts on new entrants into the asset finance market, and this is a topic that we plan to explore further in the months ahead. If you've enjoyed this episode, look out for future episodes in the coming weeks, where we'll continue to delve more into some of the topics covered in May's Asset Finance Connect European Leaders Summit. Thanks for listening.